The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
September 11th, the giant police state that's been set up in America and now projecting out across the globe hinges upon it. It is the foundation. But long before September 11th, the government was setting up its police state, its martial law, cashless society control grid, and their own policy reports from the Project for a New American Century and the Army and Naval War College, the RAND Corporation, and 100 others were all saying, the CFR Commission, were all saying, we need terror attacks to imperially mobilize, to use Brzezinski Brzezinski's comments, the American people behind this global war for empire. To mobilize the slaves, as we're called. They even call us the slaves. The mindless slaves. Because they know you don't go out and read their policy reports. How to control the chattel property. And so there are now hundreds of thousands of people in America alone researching, posting to websites, researching hundreds that are really doing a good job of it. And there are dozens and dozens of films, hundreds of books that have been, and pamphlets that have been written on the subject. And what I do at InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.com is basically post everybody's views, everybody's ideas. You'll find a lot of people that woke folks up and got other great researchers going, you know, don't even agree with their progeny. And in a lot of cases, the people that the forerunners and pioneers of exposing 9/11 spurred to wake up and become involved, a lot of their, progeny, as I was saying, they don't agree with their predecessors. But that doesn't matter. It's about an open, free debate, looking at the evidence, debating it, going over it. And it's clear. If you research 9/11, what we can prove is their official story is absolutely false. It is a fraud. It is impossible. There is a better chance of fire ants in my backyard building a spaceship and flying to Europa, being sarcastic, than there is of what we're told on 9/11 happening. And people from a cave doing what they supposedly did, having NORAD stand down, having drills the morning of 9/11, having modern steel buildings collapse, public officials being warned not to fly, CIA insider put options, the money men for Al-Qaeda meeting with the House and Senate intelligence heads on the morning of the 9/11 at the Capitol, Bush Sr. meeting with the head of the Bin Laden family to Carlisle Group function, flying the Bin Ladens out of the country, flying Al-Qaeda and the Arab leaders out of Afghanistan days before it fell, our government. You know, all of this, it's clear we know what happened. It's clear that the hijackers were government ops, thinking they were part of a drill, who got on board those airplanes that morning, and subsequently then pressure was lost in the planes. The people were incapacitated or killed. Remote control took control. The planes were flown into the buildings. Now, that's what all the evidence points to. That's the, in the scientific method, you know, we know the government's behind it. You know, we know, quote, they committed the murder. You know, the cops know you did the murder. Okay? You just won't give them the final specific details. All right? And with us for this hour, and hopefully into the next hour, because I even canceled the guest we had set up a week ago, the third hour, so you can hopefully stay with us, is a gentleman who I'm really impressed with, the research he's done. Really, it's preeminent on Building 7. He's uncovered a lot of documents about the stand-down, about Rumsfeld taking control of the shoot-down orders a few months before 9/11, Cheney in the bunker. He really hones in on the stuff we can prove. What I've been on since day one, what I think is the smoking guns. Now, I'm undecided on the Pentagon. I'm undecided on pods. I'm undecided on all of that. I just don't go there, and we've had guests on about it, but I don't focus on it. It's not my main focus. We post it all. But my main focus is on bombs in the buildings, is on the implosions, is on the put options, is on the public officials being warned not to fly, is on the prior knowledge in and around New York, which even MSNBC and New York Daily News admits people were warned not to go to work. Peretz admits that Odigo called its employees and said, get out of the building. You know, that's Herat's out of Israel. That's the stuff that will bring the globalists down. Northwoods can bring them down. PNAC can bring them down. I focus on that and about 50 other things, and that's what I've noticed Jim focuses in on. And I appreciate him holding during this this diatribe. You know, just because Jim disagrees with some people that we have on this show, that's not bad, and they disagree with him. It's about having a debate, you know, like you have in the university. It's about a discussion of the ideas. It isn't about one group saying you either go with my line or you're anathema or you're a heretic or, you know, go with their line and you're evil or go with my line or you're bad. You know, we need to get past the orthodoxy. And I know we got loaded phone lines. Your calls are coming up. And any issue you bring up will tie back into 9/11 because our whole world, the course we're on, is being charted with it as the excuse. Jim, of course, has written for Science News, Scientific American, Science Digest, Nature, Journal of Nature, a software engineer and research scientist. And he didn't wake up to 9/11 until 2003. But he's certainly made up for it in his research and the great findings that he's brought to the giant accumulated body of evidence. And we have something the globalists don't have. They've got their 170 IQ eggheads and their think tanks all compartmentalized, studying how to lie to us, how to cover up, how to manipulate. They've got their propagandists. But they're compartmentalized. They've got to kind of keep wraps on things. And they have trouble responding to us. They can't cover up all their lies. Anything this big, they're going to get caught doing. And people say, well, they'd be caught. Well, they have been caught. And there's millions of people in the world looking at 9/11, hundreds of thousands in America who are really looking at it. As I said, hundreds and thousands that are really focused on it. And we have the giant brain trust here of research and people involved that's frankly unstoppable. And so the globalists are almost in a panic mode right now, admitting that we're winning the war, admitting that, quote, armies of conspiracy theorists are taking over, playing to the big room, as Vanity Fair said last year when they viciously attacked me in a cover story that I was in. And here to talk about just all of this, and I appreciate you again holding through this five-minute diatribe, is Jim Hoffman. Jim, good to have you on with us.
And thank you for that introduction.
Oh, you bet. And your websites for folks that want to check them out?
Well, my main website is 9/11 Research. The easiest way to find it is just to type 9/11 Research into Google. It's 9/11research.wtc7.net. WTC7.net is specifically about the case of the implosion of World Trade Center Building 7 at 5:20 in the afternoon for no apparent reason. It looks exactly like a controlled demolitions implosion. This is a huge skyscraper, 47-story steel building, first case in history of an implosion of a steel frame building being blamed on fire. And another website is 911review.com, in which I debunk some of the errors that are in the literature of 9/11 that have been used very successfully recently by mainstream articles. Like most recently, there's an article in Popular Mechanics that purports to debunk 9/11 myths.
And I would dub it the mother of all hit pieces.
Yes.
Now you've got an advanced copy, and we won't get into how, but you're not obviously publishing it until it comes out next week because, you know, you don't want to scoop them on their own story. But you have written a detailed analysis of it. We have a link to that on Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com in case folks can't find it in your labyrinthine websites. But
I've had such a great response to this critique that it's come right up to the top of Google. So if you type in quotes, Popular Mechanics and then 9/11 or conspiracy, but type in Popular Mechanics or 9/11 Research, anything like that, you'll get this article.
Have you had time to add my comments because I've talked to the reporters?
Oh, no, I'm sorry I didn't. I will do that in the future. But, yes, maybe you can talk a little bit about your treatment by the people preparing this article.
Yeah, and that way it's on the record for your article.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'll be glad to do that. I mean, that's what I want to talk about. I mean, you know, I could write my own analysis of it, but I think you've done a good job.
And thank you.
I mean, really, because what you wrote in the article meshes with what I got talking to these goons.
Uh-huh.
Well, let's go over the article and go over your analysis of it.
Okay. The basic approach of the article is to set up a straw man. A straw man argument is where you create a kind of a fictitious target to attack, and then you tear it down. And what they do,
you don't attack
they,
real evidences that are indisputable.
Right. Although the article pretends that it does. The article is very dramatic, and it pretends, it gives the impression through its graphic layout and the way that it seems to approach the way that it seems to be taking on the issue, the photographs that it has and so forth, that it is attacking the main issues that 9/11 skeptics bring up. And it does, you know, go around some of the main issues like the demolition of the World Trade Center. But when you actually look at the article, what it does is it brings up mostly red herring issues, and then it brings up a few valid issues, but only some peripheral ones, and then it uses invalid arguments against those. So it's very much this kind of straw man operation where they set up this thing and then tear it down and never give you a hint of what the real breadth of
well, let's start with the cover. It's a huge cover that says, tell folks about the propaganda there.
Oh, well, one thing that's interesting, so it's the cover, it's the cover story. So the entire cover is taken up. There's a picture of Ground Zero, and it says in big, a huge font, 9/11 lies. And I think that itself is very interesting. It's like people know that 9/11 is a lie.
Because they know in major polls that most Americans think there's lies going on, so that's a selling point right there.
Yeah, it's a selling point. And then in a much smaller font, it says debunking, and then it says conspiracy theories can't stand up to the hard facts. But the main thing that you see on the cover is 9/11 lies. So it keys into what people know, and then it tries to, you know, then it tries to attack the skeptics with all kinds of ad hominem attacks and so forth. There's a,
and it attacks me in the article.
Oh, yeah, several places in the article. The article has come up now on the website. So they have the text of the main article on the Popular Mechanics website. It's surprised they published it so early. Maybe they knew that the critique of it had come out. But the online edition doesn't have the editor's notes where he delivers some of the most the mean-spirited insults against the 9/11 truth movement, which...
Well, I'll tell you what, stay there. We'll be right back on the other side. Stay with us, folks. The pretext for world government, world police state. We're talking to software engineer and research scientist, written for multiple major publications like the Journal of Nature and Scientific Digest and Scientific American. Continuing, though, no, you're right. They don't normally, and I've checked out Popular Mechanics, they don't normally post their text articles until a few weeks after the magazine goes on shelves, so they sell more. Very unusual when the magazine hasn't even hit store shelves yet, it'll hit next week, to already have the text report up, and I would imagine that's to counter your expert analysis of their piece.
Yeah, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I didn't know. And I was very surprised to see it so early. And it's also interesting that when you go to the homepage of Popular Mechanics, the page is talking about the PM blog as if, oh, they're hip, they're on the Internet now. You know, it's like they're playing this catch-up game. It's really interesting.
That's ridiculous. Now, I want to get more into the hit piece, and then I want to get into the 9/11 itself. But you notice how they go after myself, and I told you this, and I hope you add it to your article. This is important. You know, you talk about straw man. They had different reporters call me, and the reporters sounded so weird out of the hundreds of interviews I've done. And I've been interviewed by the New York Times, Washington Post, Vanity Fair, you name it. You know, American Legion. I mean, it just goes on and on. I thought it was fake. This is the reporters... They would say, what about Building 7? And I'd go, okay, well, what's your evidence? And I'd go, well, Larry Silverstein says that they, you know, pulled it, and they told reporters to get back, we're going to pull it, and it wasn't, you know, hit by anything, it had some small fire. Well, we don't want to talk about that. Did you see the bombs? Well, of course I didn't see the bombs. Well, and then, well, you wrote an article saying there were seismic spikes. And I go, what article? They pointed out an article one of our writers wrote about an American Free Press article and an American Free Press article. And I said, well, it says American Free Press. It has a link. You know, but they told me the web address. I pulled up the article on my site. I said, you know I didn't write that. And they go, well, we called the seismologist, and we asked if you interviewed him. And they said no. And I said, did you ask him if American Free Press did? And they go, no. And I go, right there, you're trying to do a hit piece. And I used the term. I said, that's a straw man. And I called their editor, and he called me back, and he said, okay, we're not going to put that in there. But they still kind of did in a way your comments.
Oh, so they zoom. Their technique is to zoom in on the few issues that are not valid ones. Now, the idea that there were seismic spikes, that corresponded to the start of the collapses of the Twin Towers, I think is an invalid point. It's an easy mistake to make, but when I actually did the analysis with the timing of these spikes, the spikes occur over about a 5 to 7 second period, the large spikes, and they correspond to the time that the rubble reaches the ground. So what this Popular Mechanics article does is to address the World Trade Center demolition, for which there are numerous pieces of evidence. Rather than address any of those pieces, any of the
they don't focus on the concrete stuff.
Yeah. They find the one piece of invalid evidence that they can, and then focus on that. And then
on this questionable piece, they don't go right to the source of the article. They call someone that posted it, and then to get a false report, they call and say, "Did PrisonPlanet.com interview you?" When clearly it said the name of the newspaper. So do you see how there's wheels within wheels?
Oh yeah.
Go ahead.
So they ignore the many valid points that are much stronger points about demolition. Well, let's talk about the world, Twin Towers. They ignore the fact that the towers fell straight down, maintaining radial symmetry as this zone of total destruction, this exploding dust cloud just raced to the ground. That the total symmetry, that vertical symmetry, is what controlled demolition is all about, because a tall steel structure doesn't want to fall straight through itself.
There's a whole science to this. In fact, I have video of them blowing up Las Vegas hotel similar to Building 7, and you see how they blow out one of the central columns first, then they blow out the others to make it all fall in a small pile.
And it all has to be done with hundreds, if not thousands, of individual explosive charges placed against the supporting columns of the building, and those charges have to be set off with exact timing. And if there's even a second or two mistake in the timing, it could cause the entire building to topple. So
yeah, a lot of times they try controlled demolitions that don't work. They have to go back in.
And if they don't, then, if you have a tall structure in an urban setting with other buildings next to it, and the building topples, that's a huge amount of damage.
I'm sure you're familiar with the demolitions they've tried to do before, though, where it doesn't come down.
Oh, no, I'm not familiar with those, no.
Yeah, there's been quite a few cases where they put the controlled demolitions in, and then some of them don't go off.
Uh-huh.
They have to go in and reset them, yeah.
Uh-huh. So they completely ignore the really compelling evidence about the demolitions, these vast clouds of dust. I mean, the Twin Towers, people, you can probably remember that lower Manhattan was just blanketed with a layer of dust because the 90,000 tons of concrete that was in the floor slabs of these buildings was thoroughly converted to fine, mostly microscopic dust with a particle diameter less than 100 microns, much thinner
exactly.
Than the air.
Exactly. I mean, if it would have collapsed on its own, it would have been in big chunks, not pulverize and explode it outward. We'll be back with a long segment. Stay there.
We're on the march. The Empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network. The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show. Because there's a war on for your mind.
Computer from months ago, I've got the clips of the firefighters saying it looked like they were bombs. You see them coming, going down, boom, 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 boom. Dan Rather saying it looked like well-placed dynamite in Building 7. I have Silverstein saying they pulled it. I have that clip. I mean, I have all these clips, and we're going to be playing those. In fact, you have that Silverstein clip ready? Here it is. Here's Silverstein from the PBS documentary America Rebuilding. Here it is.
World Trade Center 7 had always been considered the starting point for rebuilding. Located north of the slurry wall, 7 had been cleared faster than the rest of the site, and there had been no bodies to recover. Pelted by debris when the North Tower collapsed, 7 burned until late afternoon, allowing occupants to evacuate to safety.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
So, again, that's Larry Silverstein talking. We're talking, of course, right now to Jim Hoffman, who's a 9/11 researcher. Jim, I've got a whole bunch of other clips, but I just wanted to play that because we were talking about this. Let's get into the real evidence of controlled demolitions in all three of the towers and then kind of compare that to how they did a hit piece on it and then attacked the straw man in this popular mechanics piece.
Okay. Do you want to talk about Building 7 first?
Yeah, wherever you want to start, sure.
Okay. So with Building 7, they have the Popular Mechanics article sets up 16 points which they want to make you believe are accepted by all 9/11 skeptics, as if there's nothing else important except these 16 points, and about half of them are invalid. But they have one point on Building 7, and they only go into it peripherally. They say that they use a quote from a website that says the video clearly shows that it was not a collapse subsequent to fire, but rather a controlled demolition. But it doesn't tell you where the video is at. You can look at WTC7.net and see I have three videos that very clearly show the building undergoing a precise controlled demolition-style collapse where the building just sinks with precise verticality into its footprint and leaves a small pile of rubble. But what they don't tell you in the article, they just leave that assertion out there, and then they bring in their NIST expert that gives this bizarre explanation that, if one column failed, the whole section would fail or something, this hand-waving argument that somehow a steel frame building could just, suddenly, undergo a chain reaction in this this idea of progressive collapse. Now,
even the experts they quote the first few weeks were, yes, steel melted, and then later when all the scientific studies show that it was, 1,000 degrees cooler at the minimum for it even to get red and start weakening, then they go, okay, it didn't melt, it just weakened and then all just fell apart. So they're changing their story, too.
Oh, yeah. So they're accusing, the article accuses 9/11 skeptics of saying that the official theory has the steel melting, the fire's melting the steel, when that story was trotted out by the experts. There's an article on BBC where this structural engineer, Chris Weiss, is saying that the fire's melted the steel. Well, if you look at the melting point of steel, which is 1,535 degrees Celsius, it's about 700 degrees Celsius higher than the maximum temperature that you can possibly get by burning any kind of hydrocarbon in an open flame, like in a building fire, without systematic preheating or pressurization of the air. If you don't have a blast furnace that has that kind of, pressurized air or whatever, you can't get much above 800 degrees Celsius with a hydrocarbon fire. And if it's a diffuse fire, not the kind of blue flame that you have on a stove, it's much cooler yet. Now, you might have a gas stove. It has a blue flame. That's about as hot as you can get burning hydrocarbons in the atmosphere without pressurization.
Why doesn't it melt the metal
grill? Stove collapse? Why doesn't the grill on your stove collapse? I mean, it's the most ludicrous idea in the world to think that a steel frame building could suddenly, rip itself apart and just shatter into thousands of pieces
and
because
fall,
of fires.
And then fall perfectly.
And then fall perfectly into its footprint, yeah. But anyway, so back to Building 7, they don't mention the three critical facts, which are, one, the building collapsed in a precisely vertical fashion. If you look in the videos, it's just amazing. The alignment of the outer wall doesn't even deviate a degree or so within the first 5 seconds of the collapse. Secondly, it collapses almost at the rate of free fall. Now, you can calculate how fast it would take a brick falling from the top.
Yeah, Building 7 fell as fast as a bowling ball.
Just about as fast. Within a half a second of the time it would take a bowling ball without any atmosphere to fall from the roof of the building. So it's just a split second under free fall time. And third,
and then again, an atmosphere would slow that down when there was an atmosphere.
Yeah. Well, so it's within, it's just clearly all the vertical support of that building was taken out in an instant for it to sink into its footprint with such.
And why do we see the penthouse collapse first?
That's because they took out the central columns ahead of the perimeter of the building. And that's
which they always do, so it falls in on itself.
Yeah, with a tall building like that, it's quite an engineering challenge to bring such a tall steel structure down into its footprint. So what they do is they take out the core structure, they take out the core columns of the building just slightly ahead of the exterior, and what happens is the core starts to fall, and then it pulls in the outer parts of the building so that what you get when the building falls is that the rubble pile, you see the outer walls of the building like kind of folding in and lying on top of the rest of the building. And if you look at photographs of the remains of Building 7, that's precisely what you see. And unlike the Twin Towers, which were just spewed all over the place, the remains, Building 7, the rubble pile was almost entirely lying and piled up on the block. This building occupied a whole city block, and it was straddled an electrical substation. It's almost entirely consolidated within that block. And now, notice they were talking in that clip about that no one was believed killed in Building 7. Well, if this is the first case of a steel frame building that imploded on itself, supposedly because of fire, shouldn't that have warranted a careful investigation? And yet what they did with the entirety of Ground Zero, including Building 7, is that they sealed off the area and started carting away the steel immediately, apparently without any systematic documentation of, you know, of the kind you would expect if they were actually investigating the incident, and instead started shipping the steel to blast furnaces in India and China to destroy the evidence as quickly as possible. They had the entire scene mopped up within 6 months. But anyway, going to the Twin Towers, the Twin Towers are often described as implosions also because you see the buildings, the buildings fell straight down, maintaining symmetry and just falling straight down. But instead of imploding on themselves, a more accurate way of describing it is that they exploded. Because if you look at what happened, the collapse started near the top, actually a little bit above where the crash zones were. The buildings were just started shattering and then evolving these huge clouds of mushrooming clouds of dust that just were growing at an explosive rate. The buildings are so large that it doesn't really, you don't get a sense of how fast those dust clouds were growing, but you can measure them in the videos, and the diameter, the radius of these clouds was growing at a rate of 50 to 80 feet per second, and so that by the time they got to the ground, these rubble clouds were about 400 feet in diameter. The blast wave was so great that it shattered windows in the World Financial Center buildings, which are directly to the west, up to about 200 feet. All the windows are just blown out. So the blast wave was so strong that it just shattered windows that were 400 feet away from the nearest of the towers. So it's, you know, clearly these buildings exploded. There's no other way to describe it, and they were just thoroughly pulverized. There was no macroscopic materials other than the metallic components of the buildings left. There was no recognized. Look at Ron. There are hundreds of images of Ground Zero, even though they attempted to suppress people from taking photographs of it.
Yeah, they said no. Yeah, don't take photographs
because they didn't want there to be any evidence. But there is enough surviving evidence that you can look at it, and you can't find any recognizable objects other than the steel skeleton and the skeletons and the aluminum cladding of the build, the metallic components. And most of those are even unrecognizable. Like every single floor on these buildings had these steel corrugated floor pans, which were large flat pieces of steel, and they had the concrete was poured on the floor slabs were poured on these pans. But you don't even see any big sections of these pans. I mean, if the pancake theory were correct and the floors were pancaking down, you should have a pile of platters, a pile of these.
Instead, they blew Tower 1 and 2 from the top down, boom, 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 with Building 7, with the classical demolition blowing
from
out
the bottom up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they were done
in
very.
We even got video stills where you zoom in on 7 and you zoom in on other buildings, and you can clearly see the explosions following down as it collapses.
Yeah, and one of the really interesting features in the collapses of the towers is that there are these things, these high velocity energetic ejections of gas and dust that are called squibs, and you see these little things ejecting about 10 stories below the zone of complete destruction.
And you see this when they blow up Las Vegas hotels.
Yeah, you see squibs, although they're not as energetic. They're more like little kind of blunt puffs of dust. But in the case of the towers, you see these really energetic squibs of coming out and shooting out about 100 feet
from
the...
Well, I've seen some controlled demolitions where the squibs are even bigger.
Yeah, well, there's so many ways that you can do controlled demolitions. One thing that people often don't understand is they see Building 7, they think, they see that that's a controlled demolition because they've seen other controlled demolitions, and that's what it looks like. But the towers look completely different, and I've seen the specious argument that, that can't be a controlled demolition because a controlled demolition is from the bottom up. Well, of course you can engineer a demolition in any of a million ways. You can have the explosion starting from the top or starting from the bottom, or you can have large explosions or small ones there's any of a number of ways they did it. And
no,
clearly,
I mean, I bought a bunch of the videos they sell on TV of buildings being blown up, and they've got all different types, where it starts at the top, where it starts at the bottom.
Right.
But then when you see these office buildings or hotels, the style of 7, they like to do that crimping where they blow one of the middle or off from the middle, off center, so it all collapses in on one area.
Yeah, what's so interesting about what happened to the World Trade Center complex is the way that See, what the towers were part of this 16-block super block, and they were surrounded by low-rise buildings that were part of the World Trade Center complex. And they blew up, and they just rained all this heavy debris on the adjacent low-rise buildings and largely crushed them. Like half of World Trade Center 4 was completely crushed. World Trade Center 3, the Marriott Hotel, was about half crushed. There was a big hole in World Trade Center 6 from the falling debris of the North Tower.
But still they didn't fall.
And still they didn't fall. And think of it.
And you've got to be at ground zero to realize how far away 7 is. I mean, you've got Bankers Trust and all these other buildings right up against the South Tower.
Yeah, so Building 7...
Buildings fall into them, and they don't collapse.
Yeah, so all the buildings that were totally destroyed on 9/11 all had a World Trade Center address. So all the buildings in the main block were destroyed. Were just totaled by this. The towers were blown up, and then the debris that rained down crushed.
Yeah, only stuff owned by Silverstein gets destroyed.
Yeah, and the only other building that was destroyed was one that had a World Trade Center address, but was on a block across the street. It was it's across Vesey Street to the north of the World Trade Center complex. And so they use an implosion on that building so that they don't destroy the adjacent Verizon and U.S. Post Office buildings. How interesting.
And by the way, Building 7 is falling with these big buildings, I mean, literally 50 feet from them, folks. I've stood there.
Yeah,
and they now
built
the new 7. And so you've got another building in fires falling right there, and then these buildings hardly get damaged.
Right. So how interesting that all the buildings that were owned, that had the same owner, that had the same insurer, you know, that were part of the same insurance policy, were all totaled. But anyway, back to the point about the crushing of these adjacent buildings. It's very we're supposed to believe that, like in the case of the North Tower, that 15 floors of this lightweight construction, these are 100% steel frame buildings. Now, if you that's something that if you see the buildings blowing up, you think, gosh, these masonry buildings, all this pulverized dust and everything.
No, these are over-engineered buildings.
All buildings like this have to be over-engineered. These buildings had to withstand 140-mile-an-hour crosswinds, hurricane-force winds, and they have to withstand probably magnitude.
They were designed to take multiple large passenger jet impacts.
Yeah. And with the largest plane at the era they were built was the 707-340. Another misconception is that the 767s were jumbo jets. They're so much bigger. But if you actually compare a 767-200 to a 707-340, they're almost identical in size. I mean, a 767 is a little bit heavier, but it has a slower cruise speed. So a typical collision would actually involve less force with the 767 than
these aren't jumbo jets. These are just passenger planes.
Yeah, they have a slightly wider body, but they only have a seating capacity of about 160 or so.
Now, I want to, when we come back, play some more clips of newscast and things, and then I want to get into other areas of 9/11 that are really important evidence, and then, of course, take some phone calls. And of course, Jim's going to stay with us some of the next hour, then I'll get into some other news items from around the country and the world. But, Jim, we got a funeral coming up this weekend in Austin, and I'm going to be attending it, and I'm going to put a plug in for folks to come to the funeral. So I'm going to put you on hold, and then we're going to go to break, and we'll come right back to you. Okay, Jim?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a million. We're back live. We're going to have Jim Hoffman with us into the next hour. We'll take the calls. We'll play some clips of firefighters saying how it looked like detonators and bombs. And we have Silverstein saying they pulled it. And I have another clip where in the same video, the head of engineering for New York goes, pull it means demolishing a building. And he says, we gave the order to pull it and watched it come down. I mean, what else do you need, folks? I mean, we have them admitting it. And I've called Silverstein's office. The TV ads have been run in New York asking him, did you blow it up? He won't respond. Very suspicious. We'll go back to Jim here in just one moment. You know, I've made two films on 9/11, The Masters of Terror Exposed and 9/11, The Road to Tyranny. I also carry George Humphrey's 9/11, The Great Illusion, and Eric Huffman's excellent video, 9/11 Painful Deceptions. We have a package deal where you get all four of those videos, over 9 hours of footage, and Paul Watson's 300-plus page book, Order Out of Chaos, Elite Sponsored Terror and the New World Order, for $59.95. And even if you already own some of those videos, get the package deal where you save $53 and give them as gifts to people. Put them on Access TV, whatever. Reach out and educate folks. Then, of course, you can buy the videos individually as well. Have a lot of different specials going. Just go to InfoWars.com, peruse the Safe Secure Shopping Cart, look at all the different specials, and order some of the films today. Or call toll-free 1-888-253-3139. That's 888-253-3139. Or, as I said, the secure shopping cart at InfoWars.com or PrisonPlanet.com. It's so important to take action. It's so important to get these videos and to show them to people and to get them thinking and to tell them, go check out our evidence for yourself and realize the facts. It's so important. And my film, Road to Tyranny, is different from others because we spend 40 minutes on Oklahoma City. You know, we spend 5 minutes on the first World Trade Center bombing where the FBI cooked the bomb and trained the driver. That's admitted. You know, we just cover all these different instances of government-sponsored terrorism, and that's why it's so effective. 888-253-3139. Jim, continuing with 9/11, there's a lot of different areas that prove we had controlled demolition in the buildings, but having Silverstein say this and having Giuliani say we were told to get out of the building and already running a drill that day, now it's admitted that the FEMA was. They tried to deny that when the FEMA person messed up on the nightly news and said they were. I mean, there's so many points to this, but Silverstein won't respond to over $1 million worth of ads run in New York on TV and in print saying, hey, Silverstein, why'd you say this? Why won't he respond?
I guess it's to his advantage not to. One wonders why he would even say anything so incriminating. But what's even more amazing is why it hasn't even been acknowledged in the mainstream media that this is even there's even an issue here. Because what's so incredible about it is that the no government agency has done anything but try to sell the official story that it was fire that brought down Building 7.
And for a while they said it was some fuel tank, but then they admit that fuel tank didn't even blow up.
Oh, yeah, and how could a diesel fuel tank blow up? You know, do this experiment. Put some diesel fuel in a cup and drop a match into it and see if you can get it to burn. I mean, you have to have elevate diesel fuel.
You have to inject oxygen or aerosolize
it. Or heat it up a few hundred degrees Fahrenheit to even get it to burn. It's not that easy. It's not that volatile. So, and, you know, even if something could blow up, even if you had a tank of fuel that could blow up in the basement, it wouldn't bring the building, like, straight down into its footprint with such precision. You know, it just doesn't. You see a giant explosion at the base. I mean,
they admit that it didn't even do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the officials are still out there, you know, in the newspaper saying that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just this incredible contradiction. So if they made this decision to demolish the building late in the afternoon, think how ridiculous that is. They had demolition experts go in the space of a few hours and take down the building. But, you know, if they did that, then how come FEMA wasn't interested in that, or NIST isn't interested in this interesting detail?
Yeah, why isn't it a news item? Stay there,
exactly.
Jim. Stay there. We'll be right back, and we'll take some of your calls and get into some of the other real smoking guns of 9/11.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. We're here live and back from 9 to midnight. We're talking to Jim Hoffman, software engineer, research scientist, writes for Science News, Scientific American, Scientific Digest, the Journal of Nature, and we're honored to have him on with us, and he focuses in on a lot of areas that I think are the most important concerning the 9/11 government terrorist attacks, the Al-Qaeda attacks, and we're going to get into some of the other areas, smoking guns of 9/11, and I promise we're going to start going to your calls, Paul and Manuel and Ed and others, toll-free number to join us, 1-800-259-9231. I want to go back through and play some of these clips concerning the controlled demolition of the World Trade Center towers. Before we go to some calls, what are some other issues you want to talk about, Jim?
I think it's important to point out just how many issues there are that are smoking guns of 9/11. I think part of the way that the psychological operation of 9/11 works is that it's so overwhelming. There's so many things that are so obvious when you actually look at them that they're counting on people to be intimidated by the very magnitude of the crime, not to really want to take it apart. Let's look at one thing, for instance. The, quote, smoking gun video that, that was aired in November of 2001 in which bin Laden is supposedly taking credit for the crime. Well, if you actually look at the video, you can see that the actor who's supposedly bin Laden doesn't even have the same facial structure as bin Laden. I mean, that's how obvious the scam is.
Then they did voice print test and found out it wasn't bin Laden. Those voice prints are 100%.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just, I mean, but even without going to anything more advanced like voice test, you can just look at the photograph.
But Canadians and French did the test. I mean, you could take my voice, create a voice key with it, then later test and see if somebody's really me. And it wasn't, and it failed the voice test, and then experts looked at it, linguists. It wasn't even the same dialect.
But then, and then you can look at the hijacking scenario by which these, you know, supposedly these hijackers took over the planes and
people that couldn't get a Cessna off the ground.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, they were terrible pilots. The alleged hijacker of the pilot for Flight 77 that supposedly crashed in the Pentagon wasn't even trusted to fly a Cessna. It was considered a terrible pilot. The you know, his flight instructors were just laughing that he could even, you know, they said he couldn't fly at all. This is in the New York Times. And then you have the scenario where they're flying. If you look at the flight paths of the planes, two of the planes, flights 93 and 77, go way out as far as Ohio before turning around and turning back to their targets. Now, why would hijackers, if they were intent on attacking these targets, wait for an hour before they even turn the planes around back to their targets, exposing themselves to certain intercept had standard operating procedures been in effect?
That's another thing. They claim in the Popular Mechanics article that there have been one interception in history.
The 10 years before 9/11.
Yeah. But I mean, in reality, all the time I would hear about before 9/11 of some Cessna that went over a base or something and they scrambled F-16s and forced it down.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that one of the very, quote, experts that they cite in their article is on record saying that there were 67 scrambles in the 9 months preceding June 1st, preceding June 2001. And so if even half of those led to intercepts, scramble is when you get the jets into the air, and intercept is when they
catch up. Well, I've talked to pilots who got off course in storms and stuff, and they had F-16s fly up and threaten them.
So it's a common thing, and it's just an indication of how incredibly loose this article is with the facts that they make this sweeping claim that there was only one intercept in the 10 years before 9/11. I mean,
we have a lot of pilots that are listening. Pilots, if you want to call in, not just the news articles we have, but if you want to call in, if you can get in, and talk about people you know, or if you're air traffic controllers we've had on, or anybody who can document, just you know, for the listeners, you know, eyewitness stuff of being intercepted or watching intercepts, and a call in 1-800-259-9231. I want to go over all these points, Jim, in detail, but first we'll come back and take some calls, so stay with us, okay? We'll be right back, folks. I'm Alex Jones, InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv. And when we get back, we'll tell you how to check out Jim's website.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking with Jim Hoffman, and he is a scientific researcher or research scientist, and he's been on the 9/11 case for a few years, done a lot of really interesting work. And Jim, you ready to take some calls before we get back into other areas of 9/11 that are totally obvious?
Yeah.
Let's talk to Paul in Mass. Go ahead. You're on the air, Paul.
Hi. I was just a question that came to me, you know, when I very first saw the collapse was, how could planes bring that down? It was, to me, right off the bat, I said controlled demolition. And then the four planes being simultaneously hijacked all at once, I mean, to me, common sense would dictate that somebody was behind it. And I thought...
And an hour and a half and no intercepts, and then finally they launch a few planes and order them to fly at 600 miles an hour?
Not even 600 miles an hour. If you do the math, it's more like 300 miles an hour. It's like F-16s and F-15s. Are flying barely above stall speed.
I was about to say, they can hardly stay in the air at that speed.
Yeah.
So that was the point I wanted to make. I don't know how people could just buy the illusion of the lie. Because
well,
right
when you're at Ground Zero and you see how far away 7 is and all these buildings, I mean, that were just right up against the towers fell on,
right.
And they've just got some light damage. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I saw that live, actually. I was sitting with my mother, and I said, how did that building come down? I said they blew it up. Look. But they didn't blow it up. I said, sure they did. I said, it's nowhere near the towers.
Jim, let me bring this up to you. I've been in New York. The day of the event, I'm driving in my car, you know, at 5 o'clock or whatever when 7 came down, and I heard them go, is that a demolition? Well, there was some talk of demolishing it. I heard that on national radio, ABC radio. Listen, but since I've been in New York, people keep telling me that they heard it on NPR that day and that it was openly discussed, and I haven't been able to track those tapes down.
I'm not aware of that. I haven't seen the live, you know, many of live tapes that were made during the day. So, and I was watching during the day, but I only vaguely remember them talking about Building 7. And when I heard that, I thought, oh, maybe some small low-rise building right under the towers. I didn't even know what it was until I went back and checked it, you know, looked into the story.
Notice how much attention they gave to the big towers, but this 47-story building falls in a little over 3 seconds, and it's just, oh, it just fell.
Then it just disappeared from the news, like the day after. They reported it on the day, and then it was just gone. You didn't hear anything about it.
Unbelievable. Anything else, Paul?
Nope, that was it.
All right, thank you, sir. Let's take a call from Manuel in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Manuel.
All right, guys. You got a good discussion, and a Jim, pardon me, because I meant to call in earlier. I wanted to talk about War Churchill, Alex.
Well, go ahead and talk about it.
Sure.
It concerns 9/11.
It definitely does.
He's the professor saying that you know, that the people that died in the towers, you know, they're not innocent. And that they're basically Adolf Eichmann's. I mean, I've got his quotes here. And that Al-Qaeda was fighting back against the evil America. That plays into the globalist hands. It was Al-Qaeda that did the attacks, but some groups on the left want to say, oh, no, Al-Qaeda struck back against the evil America. That plays into the Pentagon P2OG plan to actually stir the Arabs up, and then it also bolsters the false right wing in this country to say, see how evil these liberals are?
And that's right and exact. But
yeah, comment on it. Go ahead.
I got to disagree with you when you say you believe this fool, and he's mega arrogant. You're right on point when you make that surmisal. Let me tell you something. He's not unlike every other socialist I run around here, even locally. They all believe this was a true socialist uprising, which is the most foolish notion. They don't see the fact that even petty drug dealers, who they themselves discount the phony drug war, but then they don't see the fact how the globalists even use this pretext to even that facet of society somehow shapeshift, say, a petty drug dealer into now a terrorist. They forget all the evidence. They truly think Hugo Chavez can save them. I saw War Churchill speaking on C-SPAN. It was televised, I think it was this past Wednesday. And he said, I think he's one of those UN savior types, you know. He discounts the Constitution. He calls for universal human rights. Listen, folks, listen, socialists. That was not a socialist uprising. That was an engineered attack. Recognize and look at the fact. Another thing is, Hugo Chavez ain't going to save you. The UN won't save you, and neither is China. You need to wake up to that fact. This is all controlled and engineered.
Well, look, how is it different with Ward Churchill saying the people that died in the towers were Adolf Eichmann's and they weren't innocent, and this was an uprising hitting back? You know, ignore all the evidence, but how can he say that? You know, that's just like these talk show hosts saying all of these Iraqis are animals, let's kill them. It's the same sick mindset, and that's what I'm saying. The left loves it when they're breaking pro-lifers' arms, you know, at pro-life protests, but they don't like it when it happens to left-wingers. We've got to stand up for everybody's rights, because if anybody loses their rights, we all lose our rights. Thanks for the call, Marcello. Or not Marcello, Manuel.
I think the blowback argument is very compelling for people with an ideology inclining them to that. That's basically where I was when the attack was first going on. Even though I kind of suspected it was an inside job, I was thinking, oh boy, this is the chicken's coming back to roost. And so it's very natural to accept that argument. And that's how the attack is designed. It's designed to have this hook for all these different ideologies so that they'll be brought along into buying the big lie. It wasn't until much later that I realized that it was entirely engineered.
Somebody has to ask Ward Churchill, did Al-Qaeda order NORAD to stand down? Did Al-Qaeda have drills that morning of hijacked jets flying around to confuse NORAD? Did Al-Qaeda call Merrill Lee Brown and John Ashcroft and the Joint Chiefs of Staff and tell them not to fly to New York that day? Did Al-Qaeda do the insider trading through the CIA? Did Al-Qaeda on and on and on and on? Did Al-Qaeda fly the bin Ladens out of the country? Did Al-Qaeda wire $100,000 to Mohammed Atta? No, the CIA-controlled Mahmoud Ahmed did, who was meeting with Porter Goss and Graham on the morning of 9/11. It's ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk to Ed in Pennsylvania. Ed, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Alex.
Hello.
Hi. I'd like to know, we know that the whole 9/11, the situation there was just a whole setup, it was a done deal. But what I try to inflect is like common sense. And when people try to, especially the news media, saying that a whole bunch of guys in a cave in Afghanistan orchestrated this whole thing, well, heck, I can't even get a clear hookup on my cell phone from the next county over, and they're going to tell me that guys in a cave did this whole thing. I mean, come on.
With total precision.
Sure, of course.
With just absolute total precision.
Yes. But then you
find out that the hijackers had their cars, their homes, their credit cards paid for by the FBI and CIA. They had informants living with them. They would order the embassies, even though they were on terrorist watch lists, to let them back into the country.
Sure.
We've got hijackers on buses with Nick Berg in Oklahoma riding around. And he gives them his laptop. You know, all these different CIA people around them. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. Then people say, well, how did they get on the planes then? How did they kill themselves? Folks, they were part of drills that have been going on for months before, right up to the day, with four different drills that morning, probably more. And it's clear. And you know, James Woods, the actor, weeks before, is flying on a flight from New York out to California. He's on board a plane with Mohammed Atta and others. He gets off the plane and says, at a connection, these guys are simulating a hijacking, and the FBI comes and says, shut your mouth or we'll arrest you as a terrorist. Okay? I mean, even actors are on planes. These guys were, all these so-called test flights, they thought they were part of a drill. They got on board the aircraft. And I've talked to people inside, folks, who've heard the tapes, okay? And clearly the stewardess were saying, we can't breathe. The pilots have locked themselves in the cockpit and are depressurizing. I mean, the official story is a fraud. You got any comments on that, Mr. Hoffman?
Oh, one thing to add to that is the fact that at least six of the alleged hijackers that the FBI was so quick to identify after the attack showed up alive after their photos were flashed all over the world by the FBI. And
their photos on passports, too.
Yeah.
So, magical passports.
And yet, the 9/11, even though there's all these reports in mainstream media, all these sources, you know, from them coming to U.S. embassies overseas and identifying themselves and saying, look, I'm alive. I didn't have anything to do with this. And yet the 9/11 Commission report runs with the same list of suspects that the FBI identified 3 days after the attack and doesn't even admit that there's any problem with their identity.
And the FBI even admits they, quote, had problems with
it. Yeah, but the Commission won't admit that. The Commission is the biggest fraud I've ever seen.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Ed. I want to play this clip. This is from the French documentary. This is minutes after the collapses, and this is firefighters. We bleeped out. It's not edited. We just bleeped out any profanity. This is the firefighters talking about how it looked like detonators. Then I want to play Dan Rather. Here's the firefighters.
We made it outside. We made it about a block. We made it at least 2 blocks, and we started running. Four by four, it's going to pop out.
It detonated.
All the way down. I was watching it and running. Just ran up west. And then you just sort of, this cloud of chasing you down.
Okay, that's good. Now, get Dan Rather ready. I want to see if we have time to play this before we go to break. You got Dan Rather? Go ahead and play Dan Rather.
And again, what you're seeing are high shots. Now, here we're going to show you a videotape of the collapse itself.
Describe that.
Now we go to videotape the collapse of this building.
It's amazing.
Amazing, incredible, pick your word. For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
All right, and we also have Peter Jennings saying the same thing. But regardless of all of that, this is the common sense. I mean, I had my friend Jimmy Wright on, who's a structural engineer, worked in the World Financial Center as an executive, and I had him on that morning, 11 o'clock. We came on the air, and he said, it's the most beautiful controlled demolitions I've ever seen, but they were from the top down, Alex. And that interview is on my website. But then we have Silverstein saying that they blew up Building 7, and it's on the news. We call his office. All this, he won't respond. He won't say anything. We're on the air saying he blew it up. He says he blew it up, and he won't respond. He's quiet for a year and a half now. We'll be right back, folks. He slipped up big time. Talking to Jim Hoffman, and he is a scientific researcher, research scientist, and he's really been doing a great job focusing on a lot of key areas of 9/11. Jim, give folks your websites in case they missed them.
Okay, 911research.wtc7.net, or just type in 911 research into Google, and you'll get right there. WTC7.net focuses on the case of Building 7. There's videos there that show how this was a controlled demolition. It just focuses on that case. 911review.com corrects some of the errors that are in the 9/11 literature, which...
you believe you're correcting errors. I mean,
yes.
In some cases, it's your opinion, and others, it's fine.
Oh, yeah. Well, everything is my opinion, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just saying, none of us... I mean, it's good to have a debate, though.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you do a good job of that, and I actually appreciate it. As long as it's done in gentlemanly and scholarly way, I think it's great.
I think your introduction was great. You pointed out how, people... various literature woke people up, and then the progeny doesn't even agree with the people that they initially read. In my case, I read Painful Questions, which I think does a great job with the World Trade Center, and yet I disagree with it about the Pentagon. But I think...
But you disagree, you told me last night on the phone, about the Pentagon just because you can't be proven one way or the other.
Yeah, I think the Pentagon...
See, that's what I've said all along. People go,
yeah.
Why aren't your films about the Pentagon? And I go, look, I've got them warning public officials. I got NORAD standing out. I got Bin Laden being CIA. I've got them blowing the buildings up.
I think the Pentagon attack was designed to be a confusing issue that could be used just to keep debate going that would never come to a conclusion, that would always be a source of distraction, because there's all kinds of things that we do know. Even in the case of the Pentagon, we do know that the plane crashed into, or whatever it was, crashed into the portion of the Pentagon that was undergoing renovation. That was sparsely occupied. That was only occupied by the pretty much by the office of.
And we know the FBI came out to hotels and gas stations and took the videotapes.
Immediately after the attack to take the videos. And a lot of people jumped to the conclusion of saying, "Oh, they took the videos because they don't want us to see that it wasn't a jetliner." But an alternative explanation is that they took the videos so that it couldn't be proven that it was, so that they could keep it a source of. Continuing controversy and a non-resolution.
Yeah, they're very, very sophisticated.
But that's the modus operandi.
But they cannot ignore that Condoleezza Rice called up Mayor Willie Brown and said, don't fly to New York tomorrow. They cannot ignore that the FAA called Salman Rushdie and said, no flights in the next week to New York. They can't ignore that the Joint Chiefs of Staff told MSNBC, we were told not to fly to New York that day. I mean, that stuff cannot be ignored.
Right, right.
They cannot ignore Odegaard. Calling its employees and saying, get out. That's admitted, folks. I mean, that's stuff they cannot ignore. They can't ignore Silverstein saying they blew up Building 7.
Uh-huh.
Some of the other areas, you were getting into NORAD and the planes. Let's spend a few minutes on that. I mean, folks, this has never happened before.
One thing I don't think a lot of people appreciate is just how sophisticated NORAD is. It has this. Well, they've reorganized their command structure since 9/11.
It's under Space Command.
Yeah, so there's this NORTHCOM. But anyway, NORAD has this command and control facility in Cheyenne Mountain in Wyoming that's this incredible nerve center that has, like, multiple command centers in it.
It's in control of the FAA towers.
Yeah, and it direct lines to FAA, and they have, like, continuous air coverage over the entire United States. And the standard procedure was and is that if a plane, all aircraft have flight plans, and if they deviate from their flight plans by a few degrees or a few miles, or a air traffic controller is unable to get a response from a pilot,
they immediately launch
F-16s. They immediately call NORAD, and there's planes that are on standby The pilots are in their bunkers. They run out to the planes. They fire them up, and they get off the ground within a couple of minutes. And
they scramble.
Get up to altitude in a couple of minutes. You know, these planes fly at 1,500, 1,600 miles an hour. They can cover the distance between New York and Washington, D.C. In like 8 minutes or less. I mean, you know.
But that day they're flying at 300, that's true, 350 miles an hour.
And they're dispatched from the wrong from the wrong air bases, and they supposedly fly in the wrong direction.
What were there, eight bases within 50 miles?
What's that?
There were eight bases within 50
miles.
Yeah,
right. And the most damning thing of all, of course, is that the base that provides coverage for the Washington, D.C. area's Andrews Air Force Base, which is about 11 miles from the Pentagon. You know, it's like seconds away from the Pentagon. And the Pentagon was struck at
9:40. They're saying there's a radar hole when this is the most surveilled area in the world.
In the world, and yet they can't get a fighter in the air for an hour and a half to protect what you'd think would be the most protected building in the world, and it's left wide open to...
And we even have some of the tapes that they didn't shred. We have people saying they were ordered to shred them. Where they're going, is this part of the drill? Is this the simulation? I mean, it's amazing, folks.
Yeah, the suppression of evidence, I think, it occurs throughout 9/11, like the FBI mopping up the evidence of the Pentagon attack. The fact that the steel from Ground Zero was just systematically destroyed.
We're going to come back and talk about it more and take calls.
We're on the march. The empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Leon in Texas who disagrees with us, so he'll go to the front of the line in front of Craig and David and Clint and John and everybody else that is patiently holding. Here in a few minutes, we're going to go to your calls, and I want to ask Jim Hoffman to stay with us for the balance of the broadcast, the next 26 minutes, 26 and a half minutes to be precise. Before I do that, I'm getting a lot of emails and calls. When is Martial Law, your new film, going to be ready? When? We want it. Well, because I have to take time out to, I mean, I guess I'm going to have to do it myself, write a rebuff a great rebuff's been written to the Popular Mechanics piece by Jim Hoffman, but I've got so much inside knowledge. These guys interviewed me. And again, I thought it was such a bad hit piece, I thought it wasn't real reporters. I actually called up the editor and said, are these people real? It was so bizarre. I thought it was like weird government investigators or something trying to set me. I'm not normally paranoid like that. It was so weird. I've never done that. You know, call up and go, are these reporters I'm talking to real? Because I try to send them news articles and go, okay, now we don't want to talk about that. We'll talk about this. And I'd send them more documentation on that. Well, now we want to talk about this. Anytime I could prove something, they wanted to, like, go get some obscure thing I didn't even write and then, like, try to play some game with it. It's amazing. And again, what I do with PrisonPlanet.com and TV and InfoWars.com and InfoWars.net is I post basically what everybody's saying. You know, it's about having a discussion. It's about researching. And then I will tell you with comments and with films and books what I believe. And I stick to the things that Jim Hoffman sticks to. You know, I was on the air 2 months before 9/11. It's in Masters of Terror. My second 9/11 film, I put the video for my TV show where I said they'll probably use Bin Laden, and they'll attack the World Trade Center, something like that, and then he'll take the blame for it, and then we'll have a police state. And, you know, how did I do that? I said, call the White House. Tell Bush don't blow the buildings up. Well, because I have thousands of points of information that I integrate and try to give you my analysis, and I'm pretty well known for being able to do that. You know, folks, you don't need to wait till martial law comes out to get films because I'm behind putting it out. By the end of the month, it should be on the website for PrisonPlanet.tv members. Then I've got to have the DVDs mass-produced because they're of a higher quality. These aren't burned DVDs. These are stamped DVDs. And I've got to make that. So we probably won't be offering it for general sale until, to be conservative, the middle of next month. You need to get 9/11, The Road to Tyranny. You need to get Masters of Terror. You need to get Police State 3, Total Enslavement. Matrix of Evil. You need to get Dark Secrets Inside Bohemian Grove when I snuck into Lord Bush's little satanic meeting. The mainstream news admits I snuck in. This is real footage. You need to get my videos. I authorize you to make copies of them for nonprofit educational purposes. You need to get them out to people in your area now. Go to Infowars.com or PrisonPlanet.com. Peruse the giant, safe, secure online shopping cart. And watch clips of the films. Read about them. Look at all the different specials. We've got ridiculous deals. DVDs as low as $5.95. And get them out to people. So Infowars.com to order, or toll-free number to call, 1-888-253-3139, 888-253-3139, 888-253-3139. Of course, PrisonPlanet.tv, instant access to my hundreds of TV shows we posted there, dozens of special reports, all 11 of my films, dozens of other films we've been authorized to post, text reports, my book, Paul Watson's book. It's ridiculous. Monthly and yearly subscriptions, 15 cents a day, PrisonPlanet.tv. All right, let's go back to Jim Hoffman. Jim, let's talk to Leon in Texas. Leon, you disagree with something? Tell us all about it.
Okay, I do. Basically, there's a little codicil to that thing about steel-framed buildings not collapsing from fire alone. And the codicil is that they don't collapse from fire alone if there's a professional fire department with plenty of water that can fight the fire. In this case, the professionality of the New York City Fire Department was considerably reduced by the fact that it already lost 200 people.
I'm going to stop you right there. That's pure garbage. The underwriters of the buildings did their own test. You can take steel and stick it in furnaces, and if you don't get it up to the proper temperature, and we're talking these fires conservatively, even if they burned hotter than we know they did, we're talking 1,000 degrees below the temperature of even weakening it. Okay?
The proper temperature.
Sir, I'm going to stop you right there. Hold on. Put him on hold. Put him on hold right there. They now have to admit that fire didn't make seven come down. Okay? They aren't even saying what did it now. Do you understand me that Larry Silverstein, do we have that Larry Silverstein clip ready? We have Larry Silverstein saying they pulled it. Then we have clips from the same documentary where the head of New York Engineering says pulling it means demolish. Play Larry Silverstein, please. Here's Kevin Spacey introducing it. Play it, then we'll let you comment.
World Trade Center 7 had always been considered the starting point for rebuilding. Located north of the slurry wall, 7 had been cleared faster than the rest of the site, and there had been no bodies to recover. Pelted by debris when the North Tower collapsed, 7 burned until late afternoon, allowing occupants to evacuate to safety.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
They made the decision to pull. That's the industry term for demolishing a building, controlled demolition. I mean, Mr. Hoffman comments, then we'll go back to Leon.
Well, I just wanted, he makes it sound like, oh, if there's... If the firefighters have to fight the fires in order for a building not to collapse, well, there's not a single example in history of a steel-frame high-rise building collapsing due to fire.
And they don't go up and fight them. In Caracas a few months ago, the thing burns for, 8 hours?
Yeah.
Fire coming out of, 50 floors, shooting out. Nothing collapsed. Nothing happened.
They had
Chicago fires that burned for a week. It doesn't happen.
The Meridian Plaza fire and a 38-story skyscraper in Philadelphia burned for 18 hours, just raging flames. Just the 8 floors of this building were gutted. And, you know, it went on all night, and, you know, there's there was some sagging of some parts, but none of the columns in these buildings were damaged. There's not any evidence.
Well, how does the fire make all this dust magically shoot out, too?
Then you get into the feature, all these numerous, smoking gun features of demolition.
Let me just stop you for a second. Leon, I mean, if I get mad at you, I'm sorry. It's just this really frustrates me. It really annoys me. Now, you've got the floor. Leon, but I want you to answer my question first.
Go ahead.
What is Larry Silverstein, the owner, saying there?
He's saying that he let the fire department abandon the building. Doesn't make any difference to him.
Oh, so pull it doesn't mean demolish it. We gave the order to pull it and watch it come down. That doesn't mean, okay.
So that theory doesn't make any sense because according to FEMA, there were no manual firefighting operations in the building all day. So how could they have pulled firefighting operations if there were no firefighting operations?
In any case, the buildings you people are talking about that burned for long periods of time without collapsing are old-fashioned buildings.
The Bankers Trust, sir, was literally 55 feet away from the South Tower. It fell on it. It had fires all in it. Nothing collapsed in. I've been there. Have you been there?
Trust Building and other buildings like that, like the Chrysler Building and the Empire State Building.
No. Bankers Trust is a modern, is a modern building. That is ridiculous.
Can I say something? The first interstate bank building in Los Angeles is very similar in construction to the towers and to Building 7. In fact, most modern skyscrapers have a similar design to the world, to the Twin Towers, in which they have
They have
interior columns, and they have trusses that run that support floors.
Sir, you're living on another planet. I told you to respond to what Silverstein said.
I'm sorry, but I'm not living on another planet. I have 4 years' experience as a firefighter in shipyards.
Put him on hold. Firefighter engineering said that fire couldn't cause that and said there was a cover-up going on in their major issue that came out after 9/11. Tell them about it, Hoffman.
Bill Manning in Fire Engineering Magazine was pointing out that they were destroying the evidence that this is against the law. Evidence of such disasters needs to be destroyed. I mean, that issue.
And they went on the issue to say steel buildings had never done this.
And steel buildings. Of course, this has never happened with steel frame buildings. Certainly not steel frame high rises. And the example I think
number one big, seven wasn't hit by stuff from the towers.
The myth I think that I need to speak to here is this idea that somehow buildings 1, 2, and 7 were some kind of bizarre, strange architecture, and that's just not true because most modern high rises have this design where most of the
Bankers Trust was built, I believe, in the late '60s, and I did a bunch of research for this film that's coming out on Bankers Trust. Now, sir, are you just telling me, because I've been there, I've been inside the Bankers Trust building, I was just in New York, are you telling me that Bankers Trust is an old Empire State building or Chrysler building?
No, what I'm telling you is...
What you're telling me is you're an idiot.
What I'm telling you is that if you can't pump water into the standpipe system of the building, you can't fight the fire.
Sir, steel buildings do not collapse from black smoke fires. Look, here's another thing. They say the towers collapsed because it was so hot. I got video of the people standing in the holes with the supposed hottest area. Then the feds say that all the firefighter tapes malfunction. The firefighters get mad, release it to New York Daily News. In my film, I have their clips going, this is ladder number 10. The fires are almost completely out. Call up more ladders. I'm getting more people out of here. Very small fires. I just knocked them all down.
Yeah, I mean, it's so ridiculous in the case of the South Tower, because in the South Tower, the fires had almost gone out when the building collapsed. All there was a thin veil of smoke coming up from where the fires were in the South Tower. The fires never spread beyond
the
crash zone.
You know what? Stop right there, because I got a bunch of callers. I want to finish with Leon. But you know what? From the same documentary where they talk about how they then got rid of what was left of 4, 5, and 6, the buildings that were right in amongst the towers that didn't fall from real fires in them and buildings falling on them. Let's just play the clip from the same documentary where the head of engineering for New York tells you what pull it means. Please play the clip.
By mid-December, the Department of Design and Construction had leveled World Trade Center buildings 4 and 5.
Hello? Oh, we're getting ready to pull building 6.
We have to be very careful how we demolish building 6. We were worried about the building 6 coming down and then damaging the red slurry wall, so we wanted that particular building to fall within a certain area.
And actually, the clip goes on. There's a longer clip on my website where then they go, getting ready to pull building 6. Oh, that's a good pull. It took it down well. Now, I've got a last question for you, Leon, and I'm sorry to get mad at you. Just this delusional thinking gets on my nerves. Let's talk about the rest of the 9/11 story. Why did NORAD stand out? Why do public officials get warned? I'm sure you've got some reasons for that, too, right?
Nope, I don't. Except that if you ever call for close air support, you know that it don't always come on time.
Yeah, that's right. Just all these bases and everything in an hour and a half. And then why'd the jet fly at 300 miles an hour?
I have no idea.
Because they were under orders. Thank you for your call. Jim, real quick comments because I want to go to more calls.
Oh, I don't know. The point I wanted to make about the buildings, though, was that it's a myth that there was something about buildings 1, 2, and 7 that was different from earlier buildings. There have been examples of severe fires in buildings with almost identical construction, like the First Interstate Bank building, which had a structure very similar. It's a 64-story skyscraper that had huge fires low in the building and has core columns and perimeter columns, just like the towers in Building 7. That's the most common design in modern skyscrapers.
And even if it did cause something to collapse, if magically, suddenly, the laws of science change and steel melts at 1,000 degrees cooler than it does...
It wouldn't explode into fine dust shards of steel.
It would start sagging.
Yeah, it would topple. It wouldn't, yeah.
Yeah. No, it would just magically pulverize and fall apart. Oh, man, you can't argue with these people. It's just unbelievable. That's the kind of call I like, though. Leon, you want to come on and debate me sometime for a full hour, you just call and leave us your name and number, buddy. And I'll get all my stuff together, and I'll clean the decks with you, pal. Those people were murdered in there, and I'm going to expose it. You understand me? This is serious business. I'm not playing games. Delusional thinking makes me sick. I'm sorry if I sound mean, folks. Let's go ahead and talk to Craig in Illinois. Craig, go ahead.
Hey, Alex, thanks for having me on the show. And Jim, I'm glad to get a chance to talk to you. I'd like to separate a little bit of fact from fiction because where I come from, we have a steel mill here. And this steel mill actually created some of the structure work for the two towers. Now, one of the men that worked on that is a friend of mine, and he is or was the head metallurgist for the steel mill. My father-in-law worked there for 45 years, and my grandfather, and they were also into welding and pouring the steel. And I'll tell you one thing right now. There is no way that those beams melted or anything else. It was a controlled explosion. The day that happened, my father-in-law happened to be over here having a cup of coffee with me. We watched it on the Communist News Network. The towers come down. He got up. He was so mad that he walked out of my house because he said, there's no way that could have happened.
And again, they know because when it's hard to make steel, folks, they have to blast air in and have the coke. And it's an incredibly complex process, all specially done to just make steel. And then to melt, it's even harder. Explain that to these dumbbells.
I'll tell you what, one thing about, I am not actually a steel man, but I'll tell you what, I'm a glass man. And I'll tell you one thing that is always left out is that these steel columns were encased in concrete. Now, according to everything that I have seen.
And they had asbestos on them.
Correct. And they were 3 foot square. Now, I will tell you one thing. Anybody that knows anything about any type of rock or glass knows what vitrification is. And vitrification is high temps applied to rock and glass, which don't make them, more fragile. Is what they do is they strengthen them. Because in the old days, back in the medieval times, and 1,000 years before that, they used to strengthen their force by burning great, huge fires to vitrify or completely change the solidification of the silica crystals so that it would create almost a solid glass wall, which was impenetrable. Therefore,
incredible call, and I was aware of that. Thank you for the call, sir. You ought to get.
Now, one thing I'd like to point out, though, is that when steel isn't the same as glass or rock. So when it heats up, it does start to lose strength. But you have to heat it up to about 600 degrees Celsius before it even loses a significant fraction of its strength. But the thing is, if it starts to cool down again, it regains its strength. So in the case of the South Tower, when the fires were going out, you couldn't see any flames or anything. That steel had regained probably almost any strength it had lost, and while the jet fuel was still burning. Now the jet fuel burned off within 5 minutes because the jet fuel is highly volatile.
Cool burning.
And remember, the towers fell 56 and 102 minutes.
I'm going to try to jam three calls in here. I want to thank Jim Mahoff for coming on with us. 2 hours of the broadcast. We'll go back to Jim here in a second. Just briefly, if you want to keep drinking all the toxins in the water, want to be idiots, don't want to listen to what we're saying, don't call New Millennium Concepts at 1-888-803-4438. Don't go to BerkeyWater.com. It's great systems made in America that cut all the garbage out. It's what I use. You need to give them a call, 888-803-4438. Or BerkeyWater.com. A lot of big specials going right now. 888-803-4438 or BerkeyWater.com. Just check it out. It's the right thing to do. Real fast, Jim, try to finish up what you were saying before the break.
Well, let's see. What was the... I can't remember what I was talking about.
Talking about the steel in the buildings.
Oh, just the fact that steel does lose strength at high temperatures. One thing to point out about fires in steel frame buildings is that there's, in the Twin Towers, there's 90,000 tons of concrete in these buildings. And if you know the first thing about metals, you know that metal has a high thermal conductivity. Take a blowtorch to a big piece of steel, and what happens? It just wicks away the heat. So even if the fires could get up to some whatever temperature, the steel would be well below those temperatures.
Also, we had the people standing in the holes and the firefighters.
Yeah, and also the fact, another thing is that people confuse the North Tower and the South Tower. The North Tower had some serious fires, but the South Tower, the fires had basically gone out by the time the building collapsed. All there was just a thin black smoke, the kind that you get when you snuff out a fire.
Paper
black
smoke
means an oxygen-starved fire. There were firefighters in the 78th floor sky lobby of the North Tower saying there's two pockets of fire. Let's knock them out.
Yeah, we played the clips here. Real fast callers. David in California. Go ahead. Then others.
Real quick. Isn't it interesting? Well, you guys haven't got to it, but Muhammad Atta's passport was miraculously found intact. That's number one.
Oh, yeah.
Jim, what I wanted to ask you is, do you have any knowledge as to why these buildings were destroyed? Now, I've heard that they were loaded,
that makes it even more dramatic. The whole thing.
Well, I think there's two issues here. One is
insurance.
One is World Trade Center 7, and that there's a number of reasons for that. And I don't think
the CIA was based in there. The Security
CIA,
Exchange Commission
Command Center. The SEC, which had all these records of ongoing investigations of companies like WorldCom, but I think that the most important reason these buildings were destroyed was to provide a psychological shock, to shock people.
Yeah, it's a three-part series. One plane hits, all cameras aim. Next plane hits, and then continual fireworks to keep it going all day long.
Every 20 minutes, there's another shock, and I think the whole
tell us give up your rights every 10 seconds.
Yeah, I think the whole attack was engineered to play in people's minds like a horror movie and to trigger their suspense.
Exactly. We got to take some final calls here. You're absolutely right. Who's up next? Clay in Texas. Go ahead. Hurry.
All right. Thanks. Hey, I want to just say thanks for your show. My friend Carl, who lives in Austin, turned me on to you. The 9/11 thing, my birthday's on 9/11. I saw that whole thing happen, and I'm with you guys. Keep going. I hope you expose this thing. The only question I have for you, in order to bring down that building in a controlled explosion, wouldn't they had to have been planting the charges in that building and the wiring?
Yeah, exactly. No, it takes a bare minimum of weeks. Thank you. John in Oklahoma, you're our tail gunner. Go ahead.
Hey, Alex, it's John again. Hey, the ATC system is designed to keep airplanes from running into things, simply. That's their job. If an airplane gets out off the system somehow or another, they will scramble the jet. Hang Stir is a prime example of what will happen. They went up, looked to see what was up there, and just waited to see what the airplane was doing. It finally ran out of fuel, the autopilot kicked off, crashed. That's it. The aircraft control system is designed to keep airplanes from running into things.
Right.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jim, you got 20 seconds.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Let's see. So we have these whole systems in place, the air traffic control system, NORAD, and everything, and they were all designed to prevent exactly what happened. Let's see, what was the comment before? There was something I wanted to say on...
Jim, what we're going to do is have to have you back up with us, and I appreciate you coming on.
Okay, well, thank you. It's been great. Thank
God bless. We'll be back tonight, 9 to midnight, back tomorrow, 11 to 2. Be sure and join us.